I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We hope this ceasefire will be good. We have been waiting for this ceasefire. We have been hoping for it. We pray for peace for all people so we can be done with all these challenges we are facing.
As the death toll in Gaza tops 14,000, Israel and Hamas have agreed to soon begin a temporary four-day truce. As part of the deal, Hamas will release 50 hostages in exchange for 150 Palestinian women and children held in Israeli jails. We'll speak to a former Israeli peace negotiator. Then, as Israel intensifies its crackdown on dissent, we'll talk to an Israeli history teacher who was jailed for 4 days and held in solitary confinement after criticizing the killing of innocent Palestinian civilians. Then, Gaza in ruins. We'll speak to two satellite image researchers who say Israel's bombardment has likely destroyed or damaged more than half the buildings in northern Gaza.
Over the last week, we saw a marked increase in expansive damage, especially in North Gaza Governorate and Gaza Governorate.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel and Hamas have agreed to a four-day pause in fighting and to exchange 50 hostages held in Gaza for 150 Palestinian women and children in Israeli jails. The short-term truce will also allow for the entry of humanitarian aid into Gaza. The deal was mediated by Qatar, Egypt, and the United States. The temporary truce will start Thursday at 10 a.m. local time. The death toll in Gaza has topped 14,100 people after nearly 7 weeks of nonstop Israeli attacks. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said it does not mean Israel will end its war on Gaza as it continued its deadly attacks on the besieged territory, including in Khan Yunis in southern Gaza. This man lost 15 members of his family, including children, in an Israeli airstrike earlier today in a residential area of Khan Yunis.
This ceasefire deal won't bring safety from Israelis. They may betray it. They may not continue with it. If there is no real ceasefire deal that ends this, it is not worthy.
Aren't you optimistic?
No, I am not optimistic, but I am apprehensive that the attacks will be fiercer than before the ceasefire.
We'll have more on the truce deal after headlines. Separately, an Israeli drone strike killed at least 5 Palestinians in the Tulkarm camp in the occupied West Bank. Palestinian officials say Israeli forces also raided the emergency department of the Tabet Tabet Hospital in Tulkarm. This comes as Israel's assault on Gaza's health system continues. At least 100 Palestinians were killed overnight and this morning in attacks around hospitals and refugee camps. Israeli forces have encircled the Indonesian hospital in the north of the Gaza Strip and have ordered staff to evacuate. There are still hundreds of patients inside, including 50 in critical condition. The head of the Indonesian hospital, Sarbini Abdul-Murad, wrote an open letter to President Biden urging him to listen to his conscience and respect international norms. Murad writes, quote, "You have destroyed the international rules of the game, insulted the authority of the UN, torn apart the sense of justice and hurt human values and tarnished the face of human civilization," unquote. Israeli shelling has killed at least 12 people in the Indonesian hospital. The World Health Organization says it's struggling to evacuate hospitals in the north.
Over 30% of the deaths and injuries are in the south of Gaza, in the so-called safe area. Over 30% of the deaths are in the south of Gaza. Then came the bombing and the attacks of the hospitals. And now no more hospitals functioning in the north. Colleagues from MSF have been reporting that they were attacked too, one of the last resorts there. So taking away healthcare of people is taking away the last resort, is taking away the last piece of humanity. And that's what's happening right now.
The WHO announced one of the agency's staff members was killed when Israel bombed her parents' house in southern Gaza. Dima Ahaj was among more than 50 people killed in the strike, including her six-month-old baby, her husband, and two brothers. Meanwhile, Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, said two of its doctors were killed in an Israeli strike on the Al-Auda hospital. Doctors Mahmoud Abu Nujaila and Ahmed Al-Sahar were killed alongside their colleague, Dr. Ziad Al-Tatari. Doctors Without Borders says it has repeatedly told Israel it's a functioning hospital and shared its GPS coordinates with Israeli authorities one day before the deadly attack. There are still some 200 patients at Al-Auda Hospital. The Palestinian poet and author Masab Abu Toha has been released following his abduction by Israeli soldiers while trying to leave the Gaza Strip with his family. Abu Toha had been heading to the southern Rafah border crossing when he was seized by Israeli soldiers at a checkpoint. He's said to be receiving medical treatment after being reportedly beaten by Israeli soldiers. Leaders at a virtual summit of BRICS nations called Tuesday for a, quote, immediate, durable, and sustained humanitarian truce in Gaza and the release of all captive civilians. The original BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, were joined by the coalition's newest members at Tuesday's high-level meeting, Egypt, Ethiopia, Argentina, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and Iran. In contrast to the U.S. and many European nations, the majority of BRICS countries, including China and Russia, have called for a ceasefire. The summit's host, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, forcefully condemned Israel's assault on Gaza.
The collective punishment of Palestinian civilians through the unlawful use of force by Israel is a war crime. The deliberate denial of medicine, fuel, food, and water to the residents of Gaza is tantamount to genocide.
South Africa's parliament voted Tuesday to suspend diplomatic ties with Israel and close its embassy in Pretoria until a ceasefire is reached. Such actions, however, will ultimately be up to President Ramaphosa. California Congressmember Rokana has become the 43rd Democratic lawmaker to call for a ceasefire. Activists and Khanna's constituents have been pressuring the powerful lawmaker to sign on to a House ceasefire resolution, including occupying his office last month. In related news, the Detroit City Council Tuesday became the largest U.S. city to pass a resolution calling for a ceasefire. Polls show some two-thirds of Americans support a ceasefire. In Missouri, protesters rallied at the gates of a Boeing manufacturing plant near St. Louis Tuesday, demanding an end to the use of U.S.-made weapons in the killing of Palestinian civilians in Gaza. Protesters say the factory produces Joint Direct Attack Munitions and GBU-39 small-diameter bombs supplied to Israel's Air Force. In Hollywood, the United Talent Agency has stopped representing Oscar winner Susan Sarandon after she spoke at a rally in New York City last week where she called for a ceasefire in Gaza. Sarandon has been active at anti-war protests to demand the protection of Palestinian lives.
You don't have to be Palestinian to stand with the Palestinian people. You do not have to be Palestinian to understand that the slaughter of almost 5,000 children is unacceptable and a war crime.
The World Food Program warns it will run out of food aid for at least 1.4 million people in Chad by January due to a shortage of funds. This includes aid for hundreds of thousands of newly arrived refugees fleeing conflict in Sudan, most of them escaping ethnic violence and mass killings in the West Darfur region. The UN says it needs at least $185 million for its aid efforts in Chad, but that lack of international interest has led to severe underfunding. Starting in December, the World Food Program's also suspending relief to internally displaced people and refugees from Nigeria, Central African Republic, and Cameroon. In Australia, Former military lawyer and whistleblower David McBride has pleaded guilty to unlawfully sharing classified material. The Australian government accused McBride of jeopardizing national security by sharing information on Australian war crimes in Afghanistan with two journalists from ABC, that's the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, who published the revelations in the Afghan Files reports. The military claimed public interest immunity in the case, allowing the government to withhold key information and dashing McBride's chances of benefiting from whistleblower protection. McBride spoke to supporters outside the courthouse.
I stand tall, and I believe I did my duty.
Yes.
And I don't see it as a defeat. I see it as the beginning of a better Australia.
Press freedom groups warned the case will have a chilling effect. In related news, a group of 16 bipartisan U.S. Congress members sent a letter to President Biden earlier this month asking him to drop efforts to extradite imprisoned WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange from the U.K. and to, quote, not pursue an unnecessary prosecution that risks criminalizing common journalistic practices, unquote. Major brands, including Apple, Disney, and Warner Brothers, have suspended buying ads on the social media site X, formerly known as Twitter, after billionaire owner Elon Musk tweeted his support for a user's racist comments attacking Jewish people and promoting the far-right anti-immigrant conspiracy theory known as the Great Replacement. It's the same white supremacist theory espoused by the gunman who attacked Pittsburgh's Tree of Life Synagogue in 2018, killing 11 people. This week, Elon Musk sued the watchdog organization Media Matters, which first reported on his comments. Media Matters rejected the suit as a frivolous attempt to silence its reporting. The group also reports X has been placing ads for major brands next to content that touts Adolf Hitler and the Nazi Party. The billionaire head of the world's largest cryptocurrency exchange, Binance, has pleaded guilty to charges of money laundering under terms of a plea agreement. Changpeng Zhao will be fined $50 million and barred from involvement in Binance for 3 years. He faces up to 18 months in prison under federal sentencing guidelines, though federal prosecutors could ask for a longer term. Meanwhile, Binance pleaded guilty to violating the Bank Secrecy Act, failing to register as a money transfer business, and violating U.S. sanctions laws. On Tuesday, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen announced the company would pay a $4.3 billion fine.
It deliberately undermined its own sanctions monitoring controls, and it failed to report suspicious transactions. This meant Binance was allowing illicit actors to transact freely, supporting activities from child sexual abuse to illegal narcotics to terrorism across more than 100,000 transactions.
Holly McGuigan, a trailblazing legal advocate for survivors of domestic violence and longtime NYU law professor, has passed away. McGuigan is credited with transforming the way the criminal justice system treats survivors of intimate partner violence who had to use self-defense to save their own lives. She served on the boards of directors for the National Clearinghouse for the Defense of Battered Women and MADRE, among others. In 2014, she won the Society of American Law Teachers SALT Great Teacher Award. Jamil Dakwar, the director of the ACLU's Human Rights Program, was one of her many students and paid tribute to her as a, quote, beloved teacher and brilliant lawyer who relentlessly fought for justice. And in Detroit, renowned civil rights attorney and human rights defender Bill Goodman has died. He was 83 years old. Some of Goodman's most influential work came during his time as legal director of the Center for Constitutional Rights. Under his leadership, the center filed its first habeas litigation on behalf of Guantanamo prisoners, leading to multiple Supreme Court victories. Goodman took on the NYPD's racist stop and frisk policy and led a class action lawsuit of hundreds of Muslim men who were rounded up and detained after 9/11. Bill Goodman was also celebrated for championing Palestinian rights. After leaving New York, he returned to his hometown of Detroit, where he continued to fight police violence and other social justice issues until his death. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Israel's continuing to attack Gaza ahead of the start of a four-day pause in fighting. Al Jazeera reports at least 100 Palestinians were killed overnight in Gaza. The death toll from Israel's 47-day bombardment has now topped 14,000. As part of the truce deal, Hamas has agreed to initially release 50 hostages in exchange for the release of 150 Palestinian women and children held in Israeli prisons. The four-day pause could be extended if Hamas agrees to keep releasing 10 hostages a day. Hamas and other militant groups in Gaza are believed to be holding about 240 hostages seized during Hamas's October 7th attack on Israel. According to the Palestinian group Adamir, Israel is now holding about 7,000 Palestinian political prisoners. That's up from 5,000 before October 7th. More than 2,000 of the jailed Palestinians are being held indefinitely without charge. Palestinian news outlets have reported six Palestinians who are being detained without charge have died in recent weeks. In Gaza, some residents welcomed the news of the four-day pause to the Israeli bombing.
We hope this ceasefire will be good. We have been waiting for this ceasefire. We have been hoping for it. We pray for peace for all people so we can be done with all these challenges we are facing. We have been fleeing from one place to another. We hope the ceasefire will be good and that we will see positive solutions from this. We pray for ceasefire. We pray for people to live in peace so they can go back to their jobs and houses to have stability.
In Israel, families of the hostages called on the Israeli government to secure the release of everyone seized on October 7th. This is Nir Shani, whose 16-year-old son, Amit, is being held hostage in Gaza.
Any person will be released is good, is important. Eventually, we need them all. But if it had to be slice by slice, so be it. We need to establish this release. The best thing is that everybody will be released at the same time. But as I said, some can stay in that situation for a bit longer, and some will not be able to hold on. So we have to start doing the deals and get them back to us.
We're joined now by Daniel Levy, the president of the U.S. Middle East Project. He served as an Israeli peace negotiator under Prime Ministers Ehud Barak and Yitzhak Rabin. His piece for the New York Times earlier this month was headlined, "The Road Back from Hell." We're going to get to that in a moment, Daniel. Thanks so much for joining us again. But we want to start off with this deal that has been reached. We know a good deal about the horrific story of the hostages who are being held, Hamas is holding, or other groups in Gaza, about 240 of them. We know less about the Palestinian prisoners, the women and children. It's going to be 3-1. They will release 150 Palestinian prisoners for 50 hostages. Can you tell us about these people who are in prison? We don't know specifically, though the Israeli government is releasing their names. But who is held in Palestinian jails? Who are these women and children?
Well, I think, Amy, that first of all, let's acknowledge this is a rare glimmer of hope. It will be very good to see those Israelis who will be coming home. It will be so important to have those 4 or 5 days without bombardment, without civilian losses in Gaza. It would be horrendous if we then return to where we have been in these last 40 plus terrible days, and to see those women and children coming out. I can't speak to the names, we don't know them. I mentioned the Palestinian organization Adamir. I suggest people look up that organization, which advocates on behalf of Palestinian prisoners. By the way, last government in Israel, the government of Bennett, Lapid, Gantz, super extremists as we come to know them, Netanyahu government. That organization was one of six Palestinian NGOs that was deemed criminal, terrorist, by the Israeli government. Israel has different ways of trying and convicting, or not convicting, Palestinians that it then holds in its prisons. the issue of child detention is something that Defense of the Child International has particularly drawn attention to, the number of children who end up in Israeli prisons, who go through military trials. Israel uses military courts. Women are part of the resistance, part of the struggle. Some Palestinians who are part of that struggle, others are there on spurious accusations. And then Israel has a system of administrative detention where it will hold people without trial. It will say, the security establishment will say to the courts, this is too sensitive, we can't share the information, and people can be held indefinitely under administrative detention. So that's the ways in which they are held. As we've heard, more than 2,000 have been arrested, I think maybe 2,500, in the West Bank since the start, since October 7th. So we're going to get some of those out now, the women and children, and I imagine if there are going to be further prisoner releases, if there are going to be further releases from Gaza, you will have exchanges of prisoners of those Palestinians being held in.
Daniel, we're going to break and come back to you. We're going to try to call you on the phone to get a better sound from your system. Daniel Levy is the president of the U.S. Middle East Project, former Israeli peace negotiator with the Palestinians at Taba under Prime Minister Ehud Barak and at Oslo B under Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin. We'll be linking with him in a moment.
We rise, all of the children rise, elders with wisdom rise, ancestors surround us rise, in hope, in prayer, we fight.
By Batya Levine, sung at many of the Jewish resistance protests calling for a ceasefire now. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Our guest is Daniel Levy, president of the U.S. Middle East Project, former Israeli peace negotiator with the Palestinians. Juan?
Yes, Daniel, I wanted to ask you about the just announced in the last few hours, this temporary, truce. In an interview with The Guardian recently, you said, quote, my sense is that the Israelis are always trying to get another day and another day and another day of operations before agreeing to a deal. Because we've heard now of this potential truce now for 2 weeks. And each day we kept hearing that it was imminent, that it was imminent. But what has Israel been able to do during that time while it was finally reached and officially declared?
Well, Juan, unfortunately, the answer to that question is an awful lot of additional damage, civilian loss, children being killed. We've seen the devastation in hospitals in Gaza. Now, I think the Israeli government was probably each day hoping it would buy the lottery ticket and capture one of the Hamas leaders, kill one of the Hamas leaders. The names Yahya Sinwar and Mohammed Deif are the ones that spring to mind. And I think this is crucial. Why have they held out so long? I think that Prime Minister Netanyahu and the leadership understood that once you go into this new phase where you've agreed an initial prisoner release, a few things happen. Some new dynamics come into play. On the Israeli side, internally, in the public debate inside Israel, people see that you can get people out through a negotiated deal. And I think Netanyahu is worried that that will increase the pressure on him to do further deals, to make these arrangements whereby you end the military assault. And he hasn't wanted that because they haven't achieved their military objectives, which are unachievable, by the way. And because he knows that the morning after this, he faces the music and he is likely to be toast politically. They know other things will happen as a consequence of this. For instance, we may see more Western media using this lull to show us more of the devastation inside Gaza. In fact, there's a report in Politico which says some in the administration are worried what these images may do to public opinion even more. So there's real concern, I think, on the Israeli side that this sets in motion a dynamic which could end a war which they want to continue. And I would say that the families have done so much of the heavy lifting inside Israel in changing the public debate and getting us to this point. I don't think so much should be placed on their shoulders. I think now, belatedly, because it should have happened long ago, is the time for the U.S. administration and others to step up and to desist from their opposition to a ceasefire, because it would be so cruel if after this we see a return of the kinds of assaults, bombings and losses on the Palestinian side in Gaza. And unfortunately, in their statements that they put out recognizing this initial deal, neither President Biden nor Secretary Blinken did that. And they still actually failed to talk about Palestinian lives with empathy and to accord those lives humanity and dignity, which is such a sad thing.
Well, and you just said that you thought that the goals of Netanyahu are unachievable. Why is that?
Well, he has talked about the elimination of Hamas. That is not a militarily achievable objective in my mind. Hamas is a movement that has withstood this pressure. So I think there will still be, it may be somewhat residual, but a Hamas fighting capacity. But Hamas is a political movement. Hamas is an idea. I don't want to lionize that. But I think we have to recognize that when people are met with a system of structural violence, they resist. That resistance may be in the form of Hamas. That resistance may be in the form of other armed groups. By the way, that resistance may be in the form of calling for boycotts, divestments, and sanctions against Israel. That resistance may be in the form of pursuing legal claims in international courts and elsewhere. If you close all of those avenues, then you're much more likely to get the kind of outburst of violence and even the scenes which were horrific on October 7th. But Hamas will still be there the morning after, and groups like Hamas will still be there as long as the occupation and the system of denial of Palestinian rights is in place. There's no military solution.
Daniel Levy, we reported yesterday on Mossab Abu Toha, well-known writer and poet, right, who was taken for 4 days. Apparently, he was taken with about 200 people. Now, there was such an outcry in the United States, the New Yorker magazine, The Atlantic, demanding his release. No one knew what had happened to him. Israeli forces taking him at a checkpoint, that he was released. But when you have examples like that, I mean, the other 199 or however many were taken, did they then become part of the Palestinian political prisoners who then Israel can use to release in exchange for Hamas prisoners, not to mention how many hundreds of Palestinians have been arrested on the West Bank in the last few weeks? They haven't been tried, have they?
Some have and some haven't. Amy, you've got some being held under what's called administrative detention, which is basically detention without trial. I mean, my takeaway from that, amongst other things, Amy, is let's whisper it, pressure works, okay? So if pressure can be built to get one person out, can it be built to get more out? Can it be built to end what's going on in Gaza? Now, you asked about the future prisoner releases. And that is why I think we need to understand that the overwhelming likelihood, as terrible as this is that at the end of this round of the agreement reached, Netanyahu has committed himself to to resuming the military assault. By the way, in the statement he released, the first thing he talked about was not we're getting our people home. It was his commitment. I am going to continue this war. That's the first sentence. That's the intention. And that's why